This morning's scripture lesson comes from Genesis chapter 21, verses 8 through 21. The child Isaac grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, playing with her son Isaac. So she said to Abraham, "Cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not inherit along with my son Isaac." The matter was very distressing to Abraham on account of his son. But God said to Abraham, "Do not be distressed because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you to do, do as she tells you. For it is through Isaac that offspring shall be named after you. As for the son of the slave woman, I will make a nation of him also, because he is your offspring." So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she cast the child under one of the bushes. And then she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot, for she said, "Do not let me look upon the death of my own child." And as she sat opposite of him, she lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Do not be afraid, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Come, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make a great nation of him." Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. She went and filled the skin with water and gave it to the boy to drink. God was with the boy, and he grew up. He lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother got a wife for him from the land of Egypt. These are our sacred stories.
Thank you.
I don't know, something about the way he tossed his shoe and zipped up his sweater. Something about the gentle way he explained things. Something about his constant affirmation and welcome. I don't know why, but Mr. Rogers had me at hello, neighbor. For 895 episodes, over 33 years, he showed us and told us that we matter, that we are loved. You always make it a special day, he told us again and again. Just by your being you, there's only one person in the whole world like you, and that's you yourself. And I like you just the way you are. This is not the message I was getting at church. At church, I was being told that God loved me so much he had to have his own son killed because I was so bad. My sins were so great that something had to be done to save me. It was a contradictory message and one that never made much sense to me intellectually, but it certainly filled me with emotional grief, confusion, and guilt. I don't know when I began to imagine God as Mr. Rogers, but by late elementary school, I would actively imagine my Mr. Rogers God in some mystical location looking at all of us, part of one big neighborhood, and loving us, all of us, just the way we are. Mr. Rogers wasn't worried about what I was accustomed to hearing about as sin, but he was worried about the mad we feel and how to help us work through it. He was worried about bullies and how to help everyone respect everyone else, especially people who are different. This image of God as Mr. Rogers gave me a way to challenge what I was hearing from Sunday school teachers and camp church pastors. Mr. Rogers gave me an image of a loving, compassionate God who sees me, who knows my name and sees my face and intends joy for my life. A God who sees. Before we get to the words of today's lection, Hagar is the first and only person in the Bible to name God. The biblical writers assign God all sorts of names, and God gives God's self a name. But Hagar is the first and only character in the Bible to name God. She names God El Roy, the God who sees. Hagar is also the first recorded person in the Bible to be visited by an angel. And this angel is the first one to speak directly to Hagar and call her by name. Until the visit by the angel, she's only called the slave woman. Hagar is the first woman to receive annunciation of birth and the only woman to be promised descendants. This is all true, and Hagar is mistreated, abused, and oppressed. She's a slave. Sarah, her master, abuses her. Sarah and Abraham exploit her to have a baby. There's no indication that they sought Hagar's permission to become Abraham's second wife or to be a surrogate. And while the scripture does say Abraham took Hagar as a wife, it seems clear that this does not change her status in the household. Sarah is still abusive, and Abraham does nothing to intervene. When Sarah has a child of her own, she becomes even more abusive and demands that Hagar be sent away. It's impossible to miss the power discrepancy and the sense of threat that permeate this entire narrative. Sarah was Hebrew, married, rich, and free. Hagar was Egyptian, single, poor and enslaved. Sarah was older and barren. Hagar was younger and fertile. And these differences played themselves out as the relationship between the two was broken by issues of threat and power, abuse and mistrust. Hagar and her son Ishmael are pushed out, sent to the wilderness with only bread and a skin of water. Many preachers and biblical scholars have treated Hagar the same way, dismissing or ignoring her as a pawn in the larger story of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Even those who've gone back and added in Sarah, Rebecca, and Rachel have still largely excluded Hagar. After all, if we talk about Hagar, we cannot continue this babble about biblical marriage. One man and one woman, Abraham, Sarah, Hagar. And so they're pushed out. They're marginalized. Their oppression continues. Systemic oppression is something we can relate to. We are shouting Black Lives Matter because Black lives have been abused, oppressed, slaughtered. Differently abled people are showing up to walk and wheel and limp through the halls of Congress, crying out for health care, for access to resources. Our refugee and immigrant brothers and sisters know just what it is to be taken in, abused, and then sent away with nothing. We march in the Pride Parade because LGBTQ people continue to be maligned and murdered. Systemic abuse, systemic marginalization, systemic oppression. Much of this abuse has been perpetrated or at the very least encouraged by religion. Listen to how Paul talks about Hagar in Galatians chapter 4. For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by a slave woman and the other by a free woman. One, the child of the slave, was born according to the flesh. The other, the child of the free woman, was born through the promise. Now this is an allegory. These women are two covenants. One woman, in fact, is Hagar from Mount Sinai, bearing children of slavery. But the other woman corresponds to the Jerusalem above. She is free. She is our mother. Now you, my friends, are children of the promise like Isaac. But just as at that time the child who was born according to the flesh persecuted the child who was born according to the spirit, so it is now also. But what does the scripture say? Drive out the slave and her child, for the child of the slave will not share the inheritance with the child of the free woman. Hagar is revered in Islam as the mother of Ishmael. Muhammad is a descendant of Ishmael. But Paul's not even talking about Muslims here. No, in a baffling interpretive leap, he seems to be calling Jews children of slavery and somehow the followers of Jesus children of freedom. But what does the scripture say? He asks and answers, drive out the slave and her child, for the child of the slave will not share the inheritance with the child of the free woman. Whoever Paul is talking about, Christians have taken his ideas and run with them, believing that Christians are the children of promise and that the other children of God should be driven out. This is why my Muslim friends can ask me why Christians hate Muslims so much. This is how centuries of anti-Semitism began. This is how the Bible was used to defend slavery. This, not simply Paul, but those biblical writers of old who wrote into the mouth of the angel of the Lord a command for Hagar to return to Sarah and to the abuse. And then, as we heard in today's passage, the writer has God assuring Abraham that he should do as Sarah asks and send Hagar and Ishmael away, with no way to survive beyond a few days. It's all there, this and more. We can make excuses for patriarchy, for ignorance, But at the end of the day, we have a story propelled by a God-sanctioned violence and oppression. This is what Dr. Phyllis Trible calls a text of terror. She notes, Hagar experiences Exodus without liberation, Revelation without salvation, wilderness without covenant, wanderings without land, promise without fulfillment, an unmerited exile without return. And this kind of oppression is being lived out to this very day. Hagar is from Egypt, the black woman who is abused by the white woman and exploited by the white man, the single mother sent out with child and no resources, the child born with a congenital anomaly, who, though fortunate enough to have insurance coverage, busts the lifetime cap in just a few years. Hagar is a pivotal figure in biblical theology. She is the first person in Scripture to receive a visit from a divine messenger. She is the first and only person to name the deity. She's the first woman to hear an annunciation, the only woman to receive a divine promise of descendants. And she is the first to weep for her dying child. Our lection says that God hears the voice of the boy. Ishmael means God hears. But it seems to me that God hears Hagar. God comes to Hagar and says, "What troubles you, Hagar?" God knows her name. God sees her face. God intends joy for her life. Do not be afraid. God has heard. And God tenderly opened Hagar's eyes, and she saw a well of living water, and she drank deeply and gave to her son. And God was with them. God was with the boy, the scripture says. And while those men of old who wrote this narrative don't say it, God was with Hagar. In her book, Letting the Other Speak, Proclaiming the Stories of Biblical Women, Tracy Hartman, in reference to Hagar, writes, "It appears that the one we have often defined as disposable, as an outsider, is an indispensable insider after all. Hagar's story, despite all the efforts, remains. It is not driven out. Hagar's story, if we let it, opens us up to whole new ways of seeing God at work in the world. The God Hagar names is a God who sees the oppressed and hears the cries of the victims of violence. The God Hagar names is a God who sees, a God who knows our names, a God who intends joy for our lives. This joy cannot come by ignoring the oppressed and rejected. It cannot come by claiming to be children of promise while casting out children of slavery. There is much we must take responsibility for. There is so much we must work to change. We could abandon our sacred stories. We could abandon our religion. God knows they've both been used to oppress and demean. Or we can work from change. We can work for change from within. I don't know, but I imagine that Mr. Rogers likes that idea. Using our imaginations and the very best parts of our stories and religion to love our neighbors, all our neighbors. Truly love our neighbors, just as they are, all of them, all of us. May it be.